Is this thing on? Hello, hello. What is up, you guys? You are listening to Grow with Ro. I am your host, Ramana. And on this show, we have discussions that help you feel better, think better, do better, and get you from where you are to where you want to be. So let's get into it. 3, 2, 1, we are live. Hello, Miss Alyssa. Woo-hoo. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Busy weekend. You just started a new show this weekend?
We started it on Monday of last week, and now we have 2 weeks off of rehearsal until we start again on April 1st. So yeah, it was a busy week.
Do you have an agent, or like, I just see you getting cast in, by the way, guys, Alyssa over here is like a world-renowned opera singer.
I don't know about well-renowned, but I do sing opera.
But I just see you getting cast in a new show literally every other weekend. Do you go on auditions all the time, or do you have an agent, or like, how is all this happening?
So I don't have an agent. I have my undergrad and master's in opera performance. And once I graduated, I started the whole audition circuit. And I did that for about a year and a half, and got a few things here and there, and then COVID hit. And of course, they canceled any kind of performance venue was canceling all of their shows at the time. And that was when I moved to Colorado and my voice type kind of changed. And so I was like, okay, this is a great break, a great time to take a break and kind of learn new repertoire and stuff. And then once performances picked up again, I was kind of, it's very political and it kind of beat me down.
I get that.
Anybody who's in performing arts can relate. So I kind of transitioned to making it more of a part-time thing. So I don't have an agent and I just sing locally with Opera Colorado. And that way I'm able to still do what I love, still do what I know how to do, but not get into all of the ins and outs of the crazy politics of all the things.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what I thought, but then I see you in a different show every other weekend. And so I'm like, okay, so you just quote unquote, like half-assing this is getting you like so much stage time and getting cast in so many things. Do you think that's just because you're sort of like within the Colorado circuit now? And so they hire from the people they know more so than open auditions?
Yeah, so I sing with Opera Colorado. I've auditioned for maybe one other company here and they are out in Fort Collins. And so it's kind of a long drive for me to get out there and it's a smaller company. So I've mostly stuck with Opera Colorado and they do 3 to 4 shows per season. And I, for the last 3 years, I've been cast in all of their shows. And I sing with their chorus and, so I've been cast in basically their whole season. They're like, these are the shows for the season and we're offering all of them to you.
Wow.
So I'm like, okay, cool. Well, yeah. And so the one we started on last week is our last of the season. Thank goodness. I'm a little run down. I'm going through a cold just in case your listeners wonder. I'm not normally this raspy.
She has perfect speaking technique usually. Before we recorded here, I was making fun because I woke up a little raspy today too. And I was like, damn it, all Alyssa is going to be thinking about is how I'm speaking with vocal fry. For those who don't know what that is when you hear people talking like this. And they think it's super sexy, but it's really bad for you and it lacks energy and breath support and is not sustainable for long-term speaking.
Speaking of sexy, I don't know if you have watched the Love is Blind madness that's been going on.
Yes. I also think about you through that whole time and I just watch myself like in the Chelsea Jimmy situation. I'm like, I relate. I get it. I've been there, girlfriend.
I have too. I have more often than I would like to admit, but the Jess, she kind of talks like this. And I remember two of the men were talking about how sexy her voice was. And I was like, why do men like this? what is it at? Like the upward inflection and anyway.
No, I get you. I get you. I feel like it's just something that only performers notice because we have to go through extensive training for speaking. Stage performers especially, right? Because they tell us, they teach us, like you are singing to the person in the very last row. And you're doing it night after night after night. And so you have to learn how to sing and speak properly so that you don't blow yourself out on night one, because then there goes your whole career.
And I've seen it happen.
Yeah, I actually used to have nodes when I first, so I was a musical theater major in college. And then I moved to New York for a musical theater conservatory program. And while I was doing the college thing and the high school thing, I was also a cheerleader. And so those things, yeah, hand in hand, completely screwed up my voice. And then obviously going through college with the drinking and the partying and the yelling, that screwed with my voice. So I get to New York and I have nodes. But with the program, we got to have a weekly private voice session as well. And so he totally, totally strengthened my upper range. And it completely like healed my vocal nodules because they weren't calloused yet to the point where I had to get surgery to remove them. I just needed to learn how to speak properly. Speak up here, right? Up there. And I was very much like belting and pushing and so used to that. And so learning how to speak up here in my head voice, right? Or whatever, my mix, I guess, together with the strengthening of my upper register, totally healed my voice. And that was that. But I remember my first semester final at conservatory, I still had them. And that day, I like could not hit any of the notes in my like solo performance song for my final that semester. And so she let me act the whole thing out. I was like, look, let me just act the song out. Trust me, it will be good. And she's like, you know, you should just take the year off and come back when you're healed. And I was like, no, please, you let me take the semester knowing where I was at with my voice. Just let me act it out. And my acting performance of the song got like a standing ovation.
Yes, I
And
love
it was
that.
just, oh, it was so good. Yeah. Cause I definitely consider myself like an actor first before I'm like actor, singer, dancer. And so I was like, yes, that was amazing.
Same,
But yeah.
same.
Anyway.
It's for me, I can't watch that. You can have the best voice in the whole world, but if you're on stage just like dead fishing, I cannot, I can't enjoy that. The acting, it's what they call Maria Callas, who's the most infamous opera singer, she's been dead for years, but she had some pretty, well, this is debatable, but in my opinion, I didn't like her technique all that much, but her acting was so powerful that it made me look over any of the singing stuff that issues that I have with her, because she's just so, like, she gets into it in her body and every part of who she is. And I always aspired to be that kind of performer where, you know, maybe my technique isn't like 110%, maybe it's like 90 or 95. But if I can give my heart and soul into this, I will feel so accomplished that I did my job of, because we're communicators, we're storytellers, you know? So yeah, I feel you on that.
Yeah, like being able to get your emotion behind something is going to resonate with an audience more than you just having perfect pitch, right? And perfect technique. Because anyone can learn perfect technique, but no one can teach you how to truly be vulnerable and make, you know, make a script your own and make it resonate with people. So, anyway. Okay, well, let's get into this. So, you told me that your most pivotal growth journey started shortly after you moved to Colorado. So before we get into all of that, when did you move to Colorado and what brought you there?
So I moved to Colorado March of 2021. So this was right after COVID hit. In fact, I think that they shut everything down. Like Denver went on lockdown the day after I moved here. And what brought me out here is my brother and sister-in-law who were lived here for 10 years before I moved out here were having their first kid. And neither of them really had much experience with children or anything. And I had, up to that point, had been a nanny for 12 years. And so they said, my brother was like, well, what would it take for you to come out here and be our nanny? And I mean, first of all, I didn't need to be convinced because it was Colorado. And I was like, there's a reason for me to move to the mountains. I am taking it. And so that's what initially brought me out here. And anybody, I saw this meme the other day that was like, oh my goodness, what was it? It was something like, you should go to therapy instead of just moving to Colorado or something like that, because it has this effect on people where you move here and you're like, I'm going to change my whole life.
100%, 100%.
Yeah, it's comical, but it's also true.
That's funny. So, give me a rundown of who you were when you moved there. Like, what was your health like? What was your mindset like? Just paint us the picture of where we're starting.
Well, it all began. Just kidding. So I was I came from Oklahoma, and I wasn't born there, but I grew up. I spent my whole life in Oklahoma, and I had been in about a 4-year relationship, and the last probably 2 years of that relationship, I got really, really depressed, and I started living this very sedentary lifestyle where I would go into work 8 hours, come home, lay in bed, eat in bed, watch TV, like didn't get outside, no exercising, and I quickly gained like 70 pounds. And it got to the point where I was having that pulsing tinnitus in your ear, you know, when you can hear your blood, it's because your blood pressure is so high, or there's different
Oh.
causes, but one of them is like some of it's because you've been exposed to loud noises. But for me, it was my blood pressure was so high that it was just constantly whoosh, whoosh in my ear, my heart beating. And I couldn't sleep at night. So I moved out here kind of in that state. And my relationship was really toxic. And I, in hindsight, I had a lot of responsibility in that, you know, I blamed him for, oh, I'm gaining weight because of you, and I'm depressed because of you. And then moving out here, like I remember trying to get move things into my second story apartment and just being out of breath walking up the stairs. Or the day after I moved in, I walked around Red Rocks, and it is pretty steep over there in some places, but I couldn't take a few steps without gasping for breath because it I know it's the altitude change and everything, but I was so out of shape. It was bad. I think Oklahoma is at barely a few hundred level, a few hundred feet over sea level, but and then going to 5,000, but
The altitude's no joke.
yeah.
I remember my first workout in Colorado. I damn near like blacked out at the
Yeah.
gym. I remember seeing spots and I was like, I am not this out of shape. What on earth is
It's
happening?
real. So I will say that, but I also can take accountability for being very out of shape. But I was also very. I had been living in this sort of victim mindset for a few years, and I think that's sort of my relationship, my political leanings were all kind of a contributing factor to me feeling like everything else is, I'm triggered by everything. And yeah, people had to walk on eggshells around me all the time because as anything would offend me, anything would upset me. If you said, why don't you like take a walk, I'd be like, you're saying I'm fat. Or, you know, I was not a pleasant person to be around. And it's hard for me to be in my own body.
What was your political leaning?
I would say that I was very left leaning, liberal, woke, feminist. And I would have called myself all of those things at the time before woke became a kind of a negative connotation in the last few years. Like, I guess back then it seemed a little more like, oh yeah, I'm woke. So, 'cause I'm like, whatever the term woke came from, you know, it's like, I'm awake or I see the truth or whatever. Like I was the classic white woman who's going to save the world from its oppression. And, you know, that's my responsibility. I'm the white savior. Like,
Well, when I met you, so guys, Alyssa and I have never met in person. I found her on Instagram, and it was 1 year when I think I was just looking up. It was your Laura Croft picture that you posted was like the first picture that I saw of you. And I came across your page on like an Explorer page or something, and I was Laura Croft for Halloween that year. And so I saw that and
I was like,
oh my goodness,
that's right.
Yes. And I was like, oh my gosh, girl, you killed this costume. Holy crap. And then I just started following your page. But I remember, I don't know, I think it was like right after that, you like shaved your whole head, essentially. And yeah,
I was going through some things. Yeah.
Well, I think the reason I'm so excited to have this conversation and you guys will hear is like, Alyssa has made such a drastic change from being this like she said, like feminist woke girl who like shaved her whole head and was like, fuck all men, like, you know, women rule the world, to now engaged, to now like embodying like femininity and surrender and like softness and it's like such a drastic shift that I've actually been going through literally like side by side with you. So like, I always go to your page, watch your stories, and I'm like, that's where I get my news, because you post all the same stuff I do. And then I know that you like my content. It's like we're hand in hand.
Yeah. Literally. We're like resharing each other's things that we post. Like I constantly reshare things that you shared. I'm like, yeah,
exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
I agree.
Okay, cool. So left leaning and woke and feminist and shaved head and fuck men. And then you and this ex, this is the first ex from what, Oklahoma, you guys broke up. What happened?
Yeah.
Why'd you break up?
Well, we had needed to for probably, our problem started emerging the first or maybe the second year of us dating. And it kept getting so toxic. We were very, very codependent. He could not keep a job down, and I was supporting both of us. And that, like, that sort of dynamic is not really great for men and women to have with each other, because then I was like, I'm the one calling all the shots. I'm the one in charge. You're not doing anything. And so you have to do what I say. You know, I took control of the relationship, and I tried to control him. But then I was in such, like, my self-esteem was so low that, like, I couldn't live without him either, because he was the one who was making me feel like I, like a person, you know, any kind of self-worth or confidence came from that relationship, and I didn't feel it without, it was very toxic. And so when I moved out here, we had, and I've talked to you about this before, but, he had substance issues, and he had a lot of like legal stuff hanging around that I didn't realize until like the week that I moved out here. Our plan was to move together, and I didn't realize until the week I moved out here that he would not be able to move with me. And so I moved out here by myself, and the plan was for him to eventually make it out here. But just in the first month of me being here, and I saw all of the ways, or some of the ways at least, that I needed to start changing my life, my health. And I was making all of these health changes in my life, and I was trying to keep my apartment tidy, because my place back in Oklahoma was always a mess. Like they say that your space around you reflects your what's going on in your brain, and that was totally the case. And so I was trying to, you know, better the outside and better the inside at the same time. And I just felt like I finally could see that I was outgrowing him. And we would fight on the phone almost every night. And he would be out, like, partying and hanging out with, you know, he lied a lot.
Whoever.
Yeah. And so it was a struggle. And then he had plans to come visit me in May. So I moved in here in March, and then May he came to visit, and I ended things with him, because I was like, this is not going to go well. anywhere. Like, this is not good. Things are not going to change. This isn't a healthy thing for either of us. You're not going to make it out here. And I'm finally ready to let this relationship go. And so we ended things and we tried for like a week to be friends and that didn't work out. So I completely cut things off and, you know, deleted numbers, blocked things like through. I am one of those people who, if I don't break clean with you, I'm going to not be able to move on with my life at all. So, and then I was finally able to like start learning how to be a me person again.
Yeah, no, I get that. I'm very like all in or all out. So if there's any semblance of gray area, like we're going to talk about this or relive this or work through this or show up for this or whatever as many times as we need to find either black or white. Are we in or out? Right?
Yeah.
Really in anything I do as well. So I get that. Okay. So then after you guys broke up, you started to get your life together. Mm-hmm. Were you really into hiking before you moved to Colorado as well? Or because I know you've like done a lot of 14ers, you're like hiking queen, you'll go by yourself and just climb a mountain for 12 hours.
True independence.
So has that all? Yes. Has that always been a passion?
Outdoors has always been a passion. There's not a lot to do in Oklahoma that isn't, because I was in Oklahoma City, which is anything outdoorsy you want to do is probably an hour and a half in east or west direction. But I love to camp. I had taken camping trips and hiking trips prior to moving to Colorado, but it just wasn't as much of a part of my life until I moved out here. And the mountains were 15 minutes away from where I live. So it was definitely because of the access to the outdoors became much more of a big, huge part of my life than it had been before. But I don't know that I'd ever done any of that alone before I moved out to Colorado. I was always with another person. So that aspect of it was definitely new for me.
And that was, you got really into that as you started to come into your journey and your self-worth after that breakup. Was that a big part of it?
Yeah,
what were the, what kind of commitments did you make to yourself post breakup that were the things you were doing to start working on yourself?
I wanted to get to know me again because I had lost what I felt like I lost myself in that relationship. And I wanted to establish who I was as an individual. I also, my commitment to my health was to get healthy, lose all this weight that I had gained. Because I was technically morbidly obese and I felt it. I felt very unhealthy. And so I started hiking as a way to get some exercise because I felt really self-conscious going to the gym in the way that I was looking and feeling. And everyone in Colorado is very fit. And so the gym was not a place where I wanted to be, but the mountains were, and it gave me, hiking alone gave me a chance to work through a lot of my feelings about the breakup, about myself, about where I wanted to go, what I was doing with my life. If you're hiking with other people, I don't know, maybe it's just me because I'm an introvert. And so I get very introspective. And when I'm talking to other people, I don't feel like I'm actually doing inner work as much. But I was like, well, I'm here. I'm struggling with this hike because I can't walk 10 steps without stopping and gasping for my life. And I pushed myself through it. I pushed myself through the discomfort where in the past I would have stopped when it got hard. And that was something that every hike was like, I'm so proud of myself for doing this. And I'm working through, I'm starting to meet my goals. I started to see the not the number on the scale changes, but it, when you're losing that much fat at one time, it does, you know, like you can keep track of all that stuff. And I was like, well, I'm not starving myself. I'm just starting to live healthy. And so that was like my initial goal was to get healthier. But the mental aspect came with that. And just getting my confidence back was enormous.
And then the dating begins. So then after that, you started to hop on some dating apps. How shortly after your breakup did you hop on the dating apps? Did you give yourself some time or was it really just to kind of fill a void? Was it just to get the attention? What was happening?
All of those things.
I think that's true for literally everyone even now. So you're not alone.
Yeah. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. I did not wait at all to get back on dating apps. In fact, whenever towards the end of my relationship, things got so bad where I told him, I was like, I'm going to start looking for somebody else in Colorado. It wasn't a secret. Like, I told him I was going to do that. I don't think he believed that I was going to do that. And I admit that was not a great thing for me to do. And that was another toxic bit on my part. But yeah, I was immediately on dating apps. And I went on a few dates with a few, like, I look back on that. I'm like, him? Really? Like, you did not see all the 10,000 red flags just on his profile alone? But I was so desperate. Like, I was so desperate for somebody to tell me who I was again, to feel wanted and desired and loved and validated, that, like, I didn't care. Like, if I was getting attention, I was happy. And there was this big void that I was trying to fill, you know? Like, I need somebody to tell me I'm good enough instead of feeling good enough by myself.
Mm-hmm. Definitely been there. And so then you ended up with some guys that just, what, turned out to be more projects?
Well,
because you're like me in that you like... You're like, I'll be the one to save him. I'll be the one to help him. It feels good to be needed.
Yeah. Well, it feels good to be needed. And it also, whenever you're like this impossible person who needs to change, like, if I am good enough, he will change for me. You know, it's like, I will be good enough for this impossible person to change for. And that is my self-worth. That is my value, is being good enough for someone else to change. Which is so, it's so bad. That is such a bad mindset.
We almost like can't help it though, because that's what happens in all the movies. All the movies, all the songs.
Yeah.
That's the story that gets told, right? Things like, what is it? No Strings Attached or Friends with Benefits with Mila Kunis and Justin Timberlake, right? It's that. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't date. Sorry, I don't fall in love, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden comes along the girl who is the game changer.
You'll date me.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, okay, so if my situation looks that way, then it means that I am the one in a million, or I'm the 1%.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Not good.
Yeah, more women than are willing to admit date that way.
Yeah. I think luckily now we're like at the age, I'm noticing a lot of people around us being more willing to like do the work and look at themselves, right? So I do think that that was kind of like a early to mid 20s. Sort of situation, looking to fill that void by being someone's chosen to prove your self-worth. But I do think more people are doing that work now. I don't know. It's tough because I'm in a relationship now and have been for like 5 years that I can say all these things that I would do differently or be differently if I was single. But I'm curious. I'm curious if I would fall back into that pattern just because I'd be lonely, or if it would just be like natural programming that would come through versus being able to say like, hey, you know what? I don't want to change you. Have a good day, and actually be able to step away, like completely step away, like no issues. Even if they text you and you're like, dang it, I kind of have feelings, but like being able to say no, like, I don't know. I'd like to think I would, but.
I could definitely see you being able to walk away. It took me a long time, but I eventually got to the point where I could walk away, and that I know we'll like segue into this, but that's kind of how I met Caleb. Was when I decided to like, you're not going to say yes to these people who don't share your values and that you have to change, or you see all these red flags and you're like, they're a little orange, not red.
It's true. I mean, technically, because I walked away from Ryan,
mm-hmm.
That is what happened in Colorado. Things got to a point where I was like, I don't want this situation anymore, and I'm not here to change you. I'm done asking, you know, I'm done this. I just want a different dynamic. And I'm done waiting for it. So I'm going to move. And I, within 3 weeks, picked up and moved across the country. So technically.
A brave move.
Like, goodbye. So
You left and I was like, oh, we never got
Oh,
to
it was tough.
meet. That was so sad.
I know. We even like we were even trying to make plans and it just never happened. But at least we got to do this. So, okay, so then fast forward, you met a new guy, and this is where it all kind of changed. So tell me about this guy.
So this guy, I met him on dating app, and he was in Colorado Springs, and very
So
different.
long distance relationship.
Yes, pretty much. But he was very different than anybody I'd really dated before. He was incredibly direct. I could tell that everything that he pursued in our relationship had a purpose, and there was like a reason behind it. So I respected him a lot because I felt that sort of like guidance and leadership and of like, I got your back. Like, I'm gonna make sure that we're headed in the right direction. And one of the things that stuck out to me
He had
was
boundaries.
he had boundaries. He probably had too many boundaries. So on our first date, he told me that he was on the spectrum and that he had ADHD as well. And so he was telling me that so that I picked up on some of these little quirks or something that I knew what was going on. And for the most part, it was really hard to tell, except he would be brutally honest sometimes. And I'd be like, dude, why would you say that?
Wait, that's actually like such a good move because I should just preface all my friendships with just so you know, I am on the spectrum. So if I'm ever like a mega bitch, like just go with it. Don't take it personally.
Yeah, exactly. I had so much understanding for that. But then there were times where he would just like disappear for like 2 days without texting me and being like, "Hey, I'm gonna." And like one day he emailed me. Like he didn't text or call. He emailed me and he was like, "I've been on the top of some mountain for the last 2 days." I'm like, "Could you not have told me that before you just like disappeared?" And it just didn't make sense to him. He was like, "What's the big deal?" I'm like, "I've been worried about you, you know." But yeah, he didn't care about offending anybody, and I liked that. And I don't know why I liked that as somebody who had been previously offended by everything all the time. But I guess I just had this level of
I think
respect.
because it was trust, it
Yeah,
made him
I
trustworthy.
think you're right about that. I think that he made himself pretty trustworthy right off the bat, and so I knew that when he was saying something, like he was gonna be. I never had to worry about him not being honest with me, and that was really refreshing, coming from a relationship where nothing was ever the truth. But he introduced me to a lot of different things, but one of the things that he sort of introduced me to was he introduced me to Jordan Peterson. And I had never heard of Jordan Peterson before. I don't know that I feel like he's gotten more infamous in the last couple of years than when I first was introduced to him, but I'd never heard about him. And he was like, yeah, I read 12 Rules for Life and it changed my life and it's helped me. Like he was like, he saved my life. And I was like, okay, well, I'm curious to know about this guy. And he sent me the interview that he did for the BBC with Cathy Newman. And I think the preface of that interview was around the gender pay gap. And basically, he was talking, he was speaking reason, and she would not let him get a word edgewise. And she was like, so you're saying blah, 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 and demonizing him. He's like, that's not what I'm saying. She kept putting words in his mouth. She kept trying to stump him. She wasn't listening to him. And he was just being incredibly logical. And she was getting offended at just about everything he said. And I was watching this and I was like, oh my goodness, that feels like me. That looks like me, or what had been before. I was like, is this really the reality that I've been living in? And it was just like an aha.
It just emotion and chaos.
Yes. Yeah. And so that was kind of this light bulb moment where I was like, started to question everything that I had believed prior. And like I said, I mean, I'm glad that I didn't know anything about Jordan Peterson before I watched that, because I'm sure that I would have been like, he's a woman hater and he's a misogynist, you know, that all the women say these days. Like, he's a misogynist and sexist. And all. He's not at all.
Extremist.
Yeah, extremist.
Just for, like you said, just speaking some logic. And the thing with our country right now is that it is primarily run on emotion and chaos, right? Versus a lot of that logic. And that's something I definitely appreciate about Jordan Peterson is just his perspective and the ability to phrase things in a way that paint such a clear picture that you can follow the plot and you can't argue with it because you're like, wait, you've literally laid out every single step of
Yeah.
anything that I could argue about that point. You know, he touches on all of it. So good. I read that book. I would say with 12 Rules for Life, because I do want to reread it, but I do think it's one that maybe will be better listened to. Did you read it?
I listened to it twice,
Okay.
and he reads it.
Oh, great, great. I feel like it might be one that's better listened to because he does, it's, he, you know how he speaks. It's,
Monotonous.
yes, it's just like heavy and dense and very smart, and you just kind of get lost in the phrasing, in the just everything. What am I trying to say? You get lost in all of the speech because it's like these run-on sentences that are all very smart and technically grammatically correct, but hard to follow sometimes.
Yeah.
So I feel like that just might be one that's better to listen to than read.
I would highly suggest listening to it because of that very reason. I did try to read a few chapters, because I gifted the book to my brother for Christmas or his birthday 1 year. And so I sat down and tried to read through it, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is like the way he writes, the way he speaks. And so it's very like he goes on, he almost expands more than he needs to a lot of times. But I would say that, yeah, listening to it is probably gonna be a little better to understand.
So when you said that the interview was your catalyst for starting to question everything, do you remember anything specifically that was something that you began to question?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, she said something like, so they were on, I think they were on the trans rights portion of the interview. And she said, so you think that your freedom of speech trumps somebody else's right to be offended? And she truly came from a place of like thinking that somebody's right to be offended was more important than freedom of speech. And I was like, wow. I have been offended so much. I have been offended for other people. And I latched onto that, and I started thinking about like all the things that bothered me and all the ways I was being sensitive. And then I started thinking about the state of our country and how anyone who speaks an objective truth is being canceled. And I mean, I could not see things differently after that. After that specific phrase. And so I started questioning, like, 'cause I thought I was so in the right by taking the previous stance I had about the world. And then I was like, I am placating to this massive agenda of dividing people based on creating these very strong divisive emotions against each other. And like, emotions are subjective. You cannot make laws off of emotions. You cannot control, you can control people off of emotions, but like they're subjective. And just because you feel some way doesn't mean it's the truth. Like it may feel very true to you, but it's not an objective truth in the world. And there is objective truth, I believe. And so, yeah, I mean, that was like, I was like, wow, I'm looking at everything differently now.
So, what was your stance on men and on relationships prior to your stance on them now?
I was pretty much like, I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss here, but
Cuss, do it. Put it out
I was
there.
very, I was very much a fuck the patriarchy kind of gal. And men are the problem of our society and they're weak. And that's why I have to come in and be in control of my relationships. That's why I have to come in and like women can do it better. And I just like didn't respect men at all.
You just thought they were like dumb cavemen?
Yes, yeah. Because that I had fully consumed the entire pitcher of Kool-Aid that men are awful. And I'm not gonna give men, all men, a pass. Like, there are some awful men out there. There are some awful women out there. And I think that society hasn't done men any favors with creating like this feminist culture. Sex is easy. They don't have to put in any effort. Like, I don't think we're helping them out at all with how we're handling them in general.
Well, we're creating a society of really weak, lazy, fat men, right? Who don't want to do anything besides sit on the couch, one hand on their bong, one hand on their down their pants. And it's like, because yeah, if you're
Yeah.
just like back in the day, people had to learn social etiquette. People had to learn how to be charming, learn how to be funny, learn how to woo a woman, right? In order to then get a date. People had to learn courtship in order to maintain a relationship. People had to learn relationship dynamics and like have something of value to offer in order to get a woman's attention. Now, sitting at home swiping left and right all day long, right? Or even just having the accessibility to porn or having the accessibility only OnlyFans or having the accessibility to seeking arrangements or being able to pay for sex, right? It's like you never have to actually develop your character to be able to earn that from a woman by having your own value to provide. I saw this thing and it like blew my mind. It was like women are born valuable and then have to work to maintain their value, right? Because women are born beautiful right away. You have value. You're a good-looking girl. Boom. Your life is a little bit easier. It is. Okay. But then guess what? Looks fade. And now where you thought that life was so easy, you can get anything you want, you can, get guys to pay for things and this or that, like your looks fade and they're going to want the younger version. Why would anyone want to keep you around past that point? What else do you have to offer so that they don't just go for the younger model, right? Versus men, men are born like nothing. They have to develop their character, build their value through adversity. So women are born valuable and have to work to maintain it. Men are like born at ground zero and have to build their value. And that's why you'll see men 35, 38, like that's their peak because that's the time where they're kind of mature enough to start working on, holy crap, I actually have to develop myself, build something of myself so that I'm not just swayed left and right by whatever woman, right? And I mean, this conversation can go on forever, but I was even talking to Ryan about cheating, right? Because there's all this debate. You'll hear Andrew Tate just talk about how, you know what? Like, there's just certain guys you just don't expect to be faithful, right? For men, sex is sex. They can just have sex as sport. It's not emotional. Women, it's emotion, blah, 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 blah. Change of pH, change of energy, all these things that go into it. And Ryan pointed out this like blew my mind. It's because I was like, damn, okay. So, like, is the trade-off with of being with a high value man, does that mean that I'm just gonna have to be okay that he like cheat sometimes and know in my mind, like, you know what? He's not really cheating because for him, sex isn't emotion. It's just sport, blah, blah, blah. They're programmed that way. You can't expect a man to be monogamous. And Ryan pointed out, no, men who lack character do that, right? Because it takes skill. Yes, their natural programming may be to spread their seed till they're 150 years old, but that is their work. Their work is developing the impulse control, developing the discipline, the mental discipline, physical discipline, and all of these things so that they don't cheat, right? Just like women, we can just like left and right be like, oh, it's fine that I blew up and I screamed and I punched a hole over there and threw that over there because I'm a woman, I'm emotional, right? Or I get to work on those qualities because just as men have the work to do on building their character, women have the work to do on building their character. And if you are with a man who cheats, who just tells you that it's because he, that's his primal need or whatever, well, you actually are with a weak man who hasn't thought that there's more to life, than giving into his primal needs, right? Like discipline, self-control, loyalty, integrity, these sorts of things.
Exactly. And that's what I consider a true high value man, is somebody who has all of those qualities: integrity, discipline, self-control, respect. And I think it seems like it's kind of going on the downtrend, but there for like a year or two, this whole idea of, as long as I'm rich and I provide you and our family with a big house, a car, then I can sleep with whatever woman I want to, and that should be okay with you. And I can't remember his name, but maybe you know who this is, or you've seen this, but there is, what is that, that whatever podcast that has all the guys and they have on like OnlyFans models and stuff.
Yep.
They had on this guy, but he's like, he was basically saying that whatever woman he is with, he needs to have all, if she's going to keep her Instagram, then he needs to have all the passwords to all of her stuff. He needs to be able to look at her phone whenever he wants to. And that, and then one of the women was like, well, what about you? Like, does she get all the same stuff from you? And he's like, it doesn't apply to me because I'm providing for her. So I can talk to whoever I want to. And I was like, where is the thinking in that? You are not, if you don't have integrity, if you do not have like personal and physical discipline, you are not of value. I don't care how many Bugattis you have.
Literally, yeah, self-control. And even this day and age, just with dating, from what I hear, loyalty is like a super rare quality this day and age. Like, it's just like expected that people are going to cheat on each other. It's expected that they're talking to a million people at once, right? And even those who are saying they want marriage and this and that, it's like, yes, you have, yes, it is easier now more than ever to get laid, to find your next date, to not be lonely, to have validation. There is more temptation in the world now more than ever, because we've just sexualized everything and think that it's okay to just like be at the gym in a thong, which is just the strangest thing to me. But
oh my goodness,
you're like, don't get me started.
But don't look. If you look at a girl who's wearing like a, who's showing her bunghole all over the gym, like you're going to get blasted on social media. Look, I am a straight woman and I cannot not look at the woman with her areolas hanging out and her ass cheeks hanging out of her pants. Like, I can't not look at that. And I'm just, I'm like these poor men who are in here, they don't stand a chance.
Yeah.
Like, you can't not see that stuff. And it's, I'm just like, your value is not in how many parts of yourself. Like, you're not a strong, independent woman just because you can flaunt without any secrecy what you got going on.
Yeah.
Like, men, they're not going to respect you. I'm sorry. That's not a popular thing to say in this day and age, but you're going to be seen for one thing only.
Yeah. I think it's really important to, because I have friends that just send nudes to like random guys, like upon the first couple days that they've been talking, or maybe they hung out once, not in like even a date setting. It's just like a normal thing to send each other nudes now and to like sext with random men. And yeah, it's just so strange because I mean, it's just, it does feel, I guess I think it probably feels like really natural since that's sort of the expectation and like availability that people have to each other. And with phones, like it could be fairly quick to feel intimate over words on a screen because you have access to each other at any point during the day, right? So I think that like rapport is built more quickly. And so we believe that then intimacy and like trust, I guess, is built more quickly. But I think there needs to be more thought put into like the kind of guy you're looking to attract. What kind of woman would he want? You know, because the guy can play along. All guys want, like, if they can get some free nudes, they'll play the game. You know, they're not going to turn that stuff down, but that doesn't, yeah, that doesn't correlate with respect. That doesn't correlate with he sees you as his future wife. And I think that just with how things are this day and age, it's very easy for people to get those two, like, get that mixed up, thinking because he's giving you attention or because he says, oh my God, you look so great, or he sends you a nude, that that means that he likes you. And it doesn't, or that he respects you, or that, yeah, he sees a future.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that kind of at the core of that is this scarcity mindset of, if I don't send him nudes, then he's going to get them from some other girl and he's going to lose interest in me. And then that goes back to, what kind of a man are you trying to attract into your life? A man that loses interest in you because you're not being dirty on the first, like, handful of texts. And that is something that, like, as women, we need to start holding ourselves accountable for that. Because that behavior is not going to do anything but reinforce the fact that, look, I can get nudes from any girl ever because they're not hard to get at all. Like, it's not even just, like, it's unsolicited almost these days.
It's just like, hi, I'm Jessica. Here's my vagina. Like, and that's just like how we introduce ourselves.
It's the vetting process. Like, let's make sure that you know what that's seriously how I feel like it is sometimes. It's like, we haven't even been on one date, but here's all my stuff. Here's everything that now it's spoiled. They're like, why do I need to go on a date with you?
Yeah, it's like, it's like a Band-Aid but it's definitely an avoidance process, right? Because we do, it's so backwards. Like, we do this quote unquote most intimate thing before there's ever any, yeah, intimacy established between the two people. That's wild. That is wild. That then actually sitting down and having a vulnerable conversation, that's the scary part. But, like, showing your labia to some random guy that you probably he'll probably never call you again. Like, that's less scary than just sitting down and having a conversation and being honest and upfront about what you're looking for and what you, yeah, want. That's wild. Yeah. Wild.
And along those lines, something that I hear a lot these days is, from women and from men, is, I don't know if I really like them until I sleep with them. I'm like, what? You don't know if you like someone until you sleep with them first?
Yeah, I'm trying to analyze that one, because I know, so, like, sex serves a lot of, my views on sex have changed quite significantly. And I'm at a point in this, like, I blew my mind that I got to this point, but I now understand the significance of waiting till marriage. Like, I can get it.
Yeah.
I can get it. Like, how amazing to have this thing that is the connecting piece in your mind, is that it is only possible within marriage. Meaning that if you're not in marriage, you can't ever have sex ever again, ever with anyone else, right? If it's only possible within a marriage, like, what a cool, that just must be, like, such a beautiful, intimate thing to share with a person. And even now watching Love is Blind, right? Like, they're saying, like, oh my God, like, AD's like, oh my God, you haven't slept with him, to Amy, right? And she's like, there's no way, like, you have to have the test drive before you buy the car or milk the cow or whatever. And my thoughts are, it's so interesting, because even when you have sex and it's, like, quote unquote, really good, that fades over time, or you get bored over time, and you together have to continue to learn each other. You still want to explore. You still want to learn how to please this person and help them, like, broaden their horizons, right? So let's say you're with someone and you're like, oh, the sex sucked. So what? There's still that process of getting to teach one another what to do. So I don't know.
No, I totally agree with you on that. Of course, I was raised very religiously, so, like, sex before marriage was, like, always never okay. And so that's kind of what was drilled into me from forever. Like, I went to a purity class and I had a purity ring and all that stuff. And I found that over the years to be really oppressive, the way that they did it. But now, kind of understanding context of why waiting for marriage is so beautiful and can be freeing. And I don't know if, you know, any of your listeners are religious or anything, but, like, there is, if you are, this might resonate with them. But there is so much parallel in the purity and love and all the good things about sex in within marriage that reflect the relationship between like Christ and us. And that might be a little too meaty for anybody who's not very religious, but it is a religious ideal to wait. And that's because it is meant to fulfill so much. Like if we give ourselves away to all these other people, there's a bit of the less and less and less it means, the more casual it becomes, the more difficult someday when you're married to somebody, it will be to explore and learn new things. So you go, oh, I did that before. I did that there. I did that with that person. And now you're like, oh, I don't like that. And you already have all of these preferences built up. And so what if you're with somebody who wants to try something? You're like, I did that so much and I don't want to do that anymore. And it's like, okay, well, you deprived your partner of this like fun, awkward, maybe wonderful experience that you might have together. So I know it's hard. I know it's so hard in this society to wait. I think that it's a beautiful thing. And anybody who wants to should pursue that, because I think that you will find that you will be fulfilled more that way than if you test drive every single person you go on a date with.
And then it becomes more about like the vulnerability and connecting piece rather than just pleasure.
Yeah.
Right? This day and age, sex is just pleasure. But the thing is, first off, I don't know if I'm alone in this, but I never once finished with a guy on a one-night stand ever. Right? Like, it is 100% a performative situation. You're there like playing this part and wanting to leave this really good impression so that he would choose you or maybe call you again. Yeah. Right? Am I alone in that? Did you do that?
I do not think that you're alone. In fact, I think that because women connect emotionally, and that's when they can let their bodies relax enough to have an orgasm. And that is why I think that most women would identify with that, because we are in performative mode. It's like, I don't know you. I'm not going to surrender my most vulnerable part of myself, because that's a vulnerable thing to like, that is, I think that as a woman, having an orgasm is one of the most vulnerable things you could do in front of somebody. And, yeah, I totally get that. I mean, I have friends who are like, oh my goodness, I met up with this guy and I had like 10 orgasms in one night. And I'm like, must be great for you. But I'm like, I don't understand.
Well, and maybe there was like a vibrator involved, probably, right? Like, to what degree was it?
Right.
Like, exactly. We don't really know. But it is interesting, because for me, I did notice that it was linked to this piece of wanting validation, like, right? Like wanting to give a good time so that they would like me or call me again. So it is coming from a lower vibration, from a victim. It is a victim place, right? I'm trying to earn a spot in your life by doing this thing that really right now is meaning nothing to me, besides maybe kind of giving me like the addiction hit of right now I feel chosen.
Yeah.
That's it. That was it. And the original points I was going to make 10 tangents ago was that when Ryan and I first, like our sexual relationship, the way it started was that. It was that, and I, because you had made a point, you're like, people are like, oh my God, it was the best sex ever, right? It's like, I had thought that it was really, really great sex, but I know that actually at that point in time, it was like a cycle of addiction to the roller coaster, because our relationship outside of sex was like really tumultuous and like really painful. It was very much anxious, avoidant, the whole trap, it was like not good. Like not good the first probably year and a half on my emotions. But a lot of that was my own work that I needed to do, and him just not being ready or willing to commit to the degree that I wanted, right? And so the sex was like the time when I felt chosen. It was the time when I felt he was vulnerable with me. And so I was like, of course, I was like, oh my God, best sex ever. Because I'm like at the height of my like addiction, right? Like I'm getting like a hit from like that closeness. And so then when, you know, years went by and I was like, oh, okay, like the sex, like now that we're getting to a secure place, the sex doesn't feel like this giant, excessive, what's the word? It's not this like super passionate, like wild in your face thing. It's way more secure and love and intimacy and vulnerable. And yeah, we have fun, right? Like we do all sorts of, you know, there's making love and then there's like fucking and then there's like a quickie and then like there's all, we still do all these different things, have these different experiences, but it just isn't this like roller coaster of passion that really is just like that stomach flip you get from the fear of losing the guy to where when you're actually in the sexual moment, you're getting that validation. Now we're in like a secure place, you know?
Yeah. And that's why it feels so bad whenever you do that one night stand thing and then you don't hear from him the next day and you're like, was I bad? Did I not like please him? It's not that. It's that you didn't allow enough time for him to feel any emotional way towards you yet. And so what happens, I don't know if you've heard of this term, but it's like post-cum regret when a dude like, he like, you know, it can be like 3 dates, even 4 dates. And as soon as you guys have sex, you don't hear from him again. And it's like, he got what he wanted. And then he immediately was like, I don't want that anymore. Cause he didn't he did not form any kind of emotional bond with you. It was all a physical one. It takes men longer to like, well, I don't know. I don't know if that's true. Cause I've read some other things. But I feel like it takes men longer to form emotions, and it's not going to because you had sex with them. Like he's not going to immediately be like, I'm in love with her now. Most men, I know that there are some men out there who are that way, but
I heard that men bond. So how women bond emotionally through oxytocin, through sex, men bond through like challenge and adversity. That doesn't mean give him a hard time and make his life a living hell, but it's that. It's like going through something with you. That's going to be it. And so having that time, letting enough time pass of you guys getting to know one another to where maybe there is even a little bit of conflict, right? Or disagreements about viewpoints on things, about perspectives, like getting, like having differences and allowing for him to see that there are differences and that you stand your ground on the differences. Those are more of the things that helps a man bond.
Yeah. And that's actually whenever Caleb first told me that he loved me, he said that it was because we had gone through a couple of little tiffs, and he was like, because you are so understanding, and that's it, that is when the glue kind of stuck together about how he felt about me. Was like, he saw before that, he saw all of these positive things, like we shared a lot of goals and values and things, and so that's why he was there and pursuing me. But like the love portion happened whenever we went through a conflict and resolved it together, and that for him was like, yeah, her. I love her. So I think you're right.
Yeah.
Completely right about that.
And that is it for part one of my conversation with Alyssa. Tune in next week to hear more about her journey and how working on and returning to her self-worth had influenced how she approached the dating world after her toxic relationships, and how approaching dating with the knowledge of who she was and what she wanted, non-negotiables, knowing her values, all this, how all that led to her meeting her now fiancé shortly after. So for all this and more, I will see you next week.